Hey, wait, you. Yes, you. Did you know that you are crazy amazing?
Well, if you didn't, we're here to remind you. I'm Katrina Carlson.
And I'm Jefferson Denham, and we're here from the Crazy Amazing Humans podcast, where we highlight everyday humans doing crazy amazing things.
People like you and me who give back, pay it forward, and make an all-around difference in their communities and beyond.
From folks like Dr. Tom Katina, the only doctor for 1 million people in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan.
To Jonathan Mooney, who went from an illiterate sixth grader to an Ivy League college graduate and is now one of the foremost advocates for those with learning differences.
Every human being has value. Everyone has something to give, and they have a strength that they can use to better their lives and better the lives of others.
But wait, there's more. We're also committed to bringing you the most practical and inspiring information to help you discover your very best self. Because the world needs the best of you, of me, of all of us, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Jefferson. So come join us, because no one should have to go it alone.
And it's easy. Listen now for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, and follow us at Crazy Amazing Humans on all social platforms. We'll see you there.
Please listen carefully.
Hello, universe, and welcome to the Office Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Amelia Buckley.
And we're part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media, social media, and the direction of your day to help make it one focused on solutions.
7 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And also, we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy podcast.
Today we have a special episode for you on the Office Daily Update, talking about digital education and Wi-Fi and a really interesting company called Kijit. We have as our guest Michael Flood. Michael, why don't you tell us about yourself and Kijit?
Sure.
I'm interested in bringing you on here because I don't really have your bio right in front of me. So why don't you tell us who you are and tell us about Kijit and the solutions that you bring to the world?
Absolutely. Happy to do so. And thanks for having me on, Christy and Amelia. My name is Michael Flood. I'm the Senior Vice President and General Manager for the Education Business Unit at Kijit. Kijit has been around since 2003, but more specifically for the past 10 years. We as a company have been focused on connecting students to broadband when they're not at school, which you can see is a very relevant topic in today's world. And I'm looking forward to kind of talking more about digital equity and about ensuring that all students have the opportunity to fully participate in today's digital educational world.
Wonderful. We're so happy for you to join us today. We learned about Kijit and some of the work that you were doing back in April of 2020 when we learned about a project you were funding and spearheading in Austin using mobile Wi-Fi on school buses. I guess you were parking them in different neighborhoods where there was limited connectivity because they were lower income households. And I'd love to know more about that project and more about that idea to actually provide these mobile Wi-Fi hubs, I think is kind of what you were working on there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, sure. So we have been providing connectivity to students individually for many years. And about 5 years ago, we started working with school districts to provide Wi-Fi on school buses for students who have long bus rides, or you can also imagine those students who go off to football games or band competitions or debate team, and they may be on the bus for hours in the evening, you know, each way. So we really wanted to originally deploy Wi-Fi for these long trips that students spent on the school bus. And we were working with Austin Independent School District in Texas to roll out one of our largest deployments to date, which is a sponsored project by Kijit, where we agreed to equip their entire school bus fleet, which is over 500 school buses, with Wi-Fi, and to spend a year with complimentary service, really gathering data about the impact that that had on students' lives, including their ability to complete homework and behavior on the bus and, you know, everything related to how students would use that. And of course, that deployment was kicking off right when we moved into the pandemic in the spring of 2020.
So that was just coincidental timing that you were already had this rolled out planned, and then the world kind of shifted and we suddenly learned how essential Wi-Fi actually is for education.
Absolutely. Yeah. Austin has a number of low income neighborhoods where there isn't sufficient broadband penetration to households and many students that they needed to serve. And so the first question from the district was, well, we're not going to be running the buses like we normally do. Can we still do the project? And of course, we said absolutely, because, you know, there's a way to use these buses. And so the district actually quickly sped up the installation process of putting, you know, these routers on all the buses, which we had provided. And then they started taking these buses out and parking them near apartment buildings or in large open spaces, parking lots, et cetera, where families could come up, drive up, or park near, or in some cases, walk up to this kind of supervised environment where they would have access to school resources that they otherwise wouldn't be able to get to.
Really interesting. So it's not the Wi-Fi buses are themselves have the connectivity and right around them, but it doesn't actually go into the homes. It's not strong enough to get inside.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So the signal can reach usually about 300 feet around the bus for a typical deployment. But, you know, once you start trying to go through walls, as you know, with many Wi-Fi, you know, with any normal Wi-Fi network, the signal diminishes quickly. So you can reach some of the apartments that, you know, have windows facing where the bus is, you know, but really getting deep into an apartment building is much harder. So a lot of times the students or families in a car would actually come to the bus to get access.
And I know that the Austin experience is probably pretty preliminary, but have you learned anything from that? Do you have any preliminary results and how successful that was?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of news coverage on this, all the way out to CNN here in the United States, and like Dan Rather tweeted about it, and then even we had coverage from outside the United States. There was a reporting team that came over from Sweden and talked about it. So yeah, Austin combined the Wi-Fi access that these school buses were providing with meeting other needs of those households as well. So distribution of instructional materials, you know, distribution of food.
Yeah.
Some of these families, you know, they were able to really combine all of that. So the stories of, you know, impact on these households were very significant, and we're really proud to be a part of that.
That's really wonderful. And because I think, I mean, what you're talking about is equity more generally. I mean, the digital divide is something that I want to understand from your perspective a little bit more, but just delivering school lunches, because for example, I know like in my neighborhood, the Boys and Girls Club, which is just up the road from my house, every day there'd be a line of cars coming in to pick up the lunches, because a lot of kids get fed through their schools. And a lot of families, unfortunately, in our country are food insecure. And so that's a super important thing to remember. So the buses were becoming little hubs of the school coming into the communities. So the kids weren't going to the school, but the school was coming to them.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And another interesting point that, you know, schools provide a lot of wellness checks, like social emotional health too. So, you know, in addition to the school bus being there to distribute things out to households who needed those resources, whether it was Wi-Fi connectivity or whether it was food or instructional materials, there were also school staff, you know, available, you know, manning those buses, just being there. So, you know, students could come up, or parents or caregivers could come up and share other things that they needed or questions that they had. So it really was, you're right. You're completely right. It was like an ambassador into the community.
Really interesting. And so was Austin the only city that you were working with at this time? Has Khajiit gotten involved with other areas, other locations in the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we've been working on connecting students to broadband when they're not in school for 10 years. And for most of that history, it was about what has come to be known as the homework gap. So students who would leave school and just couldn't get online to do the homework that their peers could do much more easily. And so we work with today almost 3,000 school districts in every state in the United States, in every province in Canada, and even schools over in the United Kingdom. And in terms of Wi-Fi on school buses, we have Wi-Fi deployed buses in about 1,000 school bus fleets across the United States and Canada.
Amazing. So you have a whole North America footprint.
Absolutely. Yeah. We grew out of a company that was born kind of around a kitchen table by a group of parents in DC. And we've spread across you know, different carrier networks to really provide access and coverage everywhere across the United States. And then we launched up into Canada a few years ago, and we launched over into Europe this year.
Very interesting. Cool. Yeah. Amelia, do you want to ask any questions?
Yeah, I was just curious about, I know you're talking about tracking the progress in Austin and what's going on there. What do you see as the next steps for your project and where you're going to take it next? You know, what is the next step in bridging that digital divide for students?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's really two answers to that question. You know, one, with school buses in particular, many districts have been doing what Austin did, parking those buses and providing Wi-Fi hotspots in the community during the pandemic. We are all very eager to see, you know, those buses return to their role of carrying students to and from school and to and from fabulous activities. I think that'll really, you know, return more to normal in the start of the new academic year in the fall, although some schools are already going back to school in the spring. But I think really in the fall is when we'll see a lot of the traditional schooling as well as the after school activities resume that those buses get used for. So at that point, we'll be able to kind of return to gathering the data we originally hoped to gather about our ability to improve homework completion rates, you know, to really measure utilization. We have lots of anecdotes from the deployments around the country about the positive impact on student behavior on the bus. You know, you can think of a school bus can be a very unruly place, but when kids are actually working on their schoolwork, it's much more peaceful. So school bus drivers actually love that. And then also the second part of that answer is really gathering more data on how we're impacting the digital divide more broadly through our smart bus solution, but also through our smart spot solution with the portable Wi-Fi hotspots that we do, or the embedded LTE Chromebooks and Windows laptops and devices that students actually compute on.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important and interesting. I mean, my son, who's in 10th grade, suddenly in the middle of his first year in high school had to go all remote, and he's continued to be all remote. And the school district did provide hotspots, but they were in high demand and short supply. So that was an issue. And we had pretty good internet, so that wasn't a problem for him. But for other families, that is a major problem. Do you see districts going towards providing like internet access as part of the school going forward? I mean, like, because it's so necessary. This experience has shown us how important it is to be connected to the internet. Do you see that the local school districts will actually start funding that kind of connectivity and use solutions like Khajiit is offering?
Yes, absolutely. I'll address both of those parts. You know, first, just a reminder and actually something that a lot of people just weren't aware of before the pandemic. But when you think about all these students who needed connectivity for distance learning during the pandemic, you have to remember that all of those students weren't able to get online to do their homework before the pandemic.
Right.
So the issue about the homework gap has actually been around for many, many years, but it was generally a problem that schools were aware of, but didn't have any funding to address. And now what we've really shown is that there are solutions to address this, not just for when students have to be virtual, but in a normal sense and at a lower cost when they just need access to do their homework. This is something that can be solved either by, you know, embedding connectivity in the device that the school provides, like their Chromebook, or by providing a hotspot, you know, which is something that's very commonly done today. And on the funding side, there's been tremendous progress. Obviously, there was lots of emergency funding related to the pandemic, which is one-time funds that has helped address this for the full distance learning picture. But there's also new funding being rolled out that will be available beyond the pandemic for schools to really address the homework gap and other issues related to digital equity more broadly in the future.
I think it's so important to acknowledge that this is a problem which has been persisting for many years. It's just that the pandemic, like other problems which were festering in our communities, it brought it to the forefront. And we really have a different understanding now of how much of a digital divide there is. Are there any teachable moments? I'd love to hear some of those anecdotal stories. Can you give us any ideas on like a specific place where it really made a difference in these last few months?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the state of North Carolina, which is where I live, you know, there's a wide array of districts. This is actually one of the most rural states, even though we have, you know, some large cities like Raleigh and Charlotte. There are many very rural counties in North Carolina as well. And reaching into all of those school districts across the entire state has required, you know, bringing together access across 5 different carrier networks and working with the state government and working with each local school district. But the impact is really profound, right? So a lot of families, whether it's a low-income family, you know, inside Raleigh or inside Charlotte, who's being supported by their school district, where they may have many options for broadband, but their family simply can't afford it. Or if it's out on the Outer Banks, where you have families that are in more rural areas who, you know, may have less options for broadband to begin with.
Right.
You know, in all of these cases, you know, connecting students really has allowed them to continue to participate in classes that otherwise they simply would have been absent from.
I appreciate you brought up that the rural-urban divide is part of the digital divide. It's not just socioeconomic. It's also there's in certain parts of the country, it's difficult to get high-speed internet. And it just isn't economically feasible for the carriers to run their lines all the way out to the Outer Banks, right? For the few people who live there. So what Khajiit is offering is a solution which bridges that gap then?
So what Khajiit has done is we've really partnered today with all of the commercial wireless networks. So the commercial carriers, so Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, US Cellular, Carolina West, you know, all these wireless networks. We partner with them to reach everywhere that their networks reach, which is not 100% of Americans, but mm-hmm. it is far more than can be reached by wireline cable or internet connections. So there are many, many places where, you know, a wireline connection is not an option. And then in addition to that, you know, in addition to the rural urban piece, that income piece, the affordability gap for broadband is the one that impacts the most students by the numbers. And that also includes students who simply don't have the permanent home that is a luxury for many of us, right? So these are your students who may be living in pay-by-week motels or cohabitating mm-hmm. with another family or in a shelter or even just homeless, you know, on the street living out of a car. And certainly they can't go get a cable modem, right? You know, they don't have a permanent
right.
Access. So, you know, mobile technology is really the best way to connect students who don't have a specific single permanent address of record.
I'm curious about what metrics do you use to find the areas that you're going to target? Did you start out with outreach from school districts that said, hey, we have a lot of issues with connectivity? Or did you look at school data and say these are areas where we're seeing a lot of gaps in academic performance? Or how do you determine what areas were most in need initially?
Sure. So for us, you know, we think first about where are the school districts in their adoption of digital technology in general, right? So for a number of schools in the past, they would have priorities they had to address before they could even get to this connectivity issue. So getting students devices, like students have to have computing devices. If they don't have a computing device, then getting them an internet connection isn't going to help much. So we would start with like who's really been making progress on that front. And then within those districts, what is the impacted population? And I would love to say that, you know, we had to narrow it down a lot, but really every district in the country, nearly every district in the country does have this problem with some percentage of their population. And really the question is just what's the percentage? So mm-hmm. we've worked with large districts in wealthy areas where only 7% of their students have a connectivity challenge. And then we've worked with large districts in, you know, very low income areas where 80% of their kids need help with connectivity. So every district seems to have this issue. It's more a matter of what's the scale in mm-hmm. any district. And so we've really worked all across the country. As I mentioned, we have deployments in all 50 states, and we work with state government agencies as well to help us figure out and get information out to districts about how to solve this problem.
Do you feel like, because you're coming from a background with AT&T and Sprint before you were with Khajiit, I think that was part of your background. But do you feel like that there's a movement towards making broadband and this kind of connectivity more like a electricity connection, just something that is part of our infrastructure, part of our utility? Is that happening? Are you seeing
yeah.
that in local communities? And how do you see that playing out over the next few years based on this sort of the pressure cooker that was the pandemic or that is the pandemic, and how will it be different?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as you said that, you know, the world's kind of come to realize how dependent we are on both the connectivity itself and the digital skills to leverage that connectivity to impact our lives. And there are lots of community efforts. You know, some of them are very local, town, city, county based. Some of them are more broad through nonprofits that stretch across larger geographies that are really concerned with providing digital citizenship, digital skills, and in some cases, actually helping to build out broadband connectivity as well in their areas. And in an ideal world, you know, everybody would have all the access they need. And I think that we would realize that internet access is becoming as critical as other major utilities, like you cited, whether that's electricity or water or things like that. But we're not there yet, right? So, and it'll probably be a while before we get to that sort of ubiquitous, always available everywhere broadband. So in the meantime, Khajiit is really focused on helping to ensure that where those gaps exist and where there are kids who are impacted in their education, that we partner with their schools or with their local libraries to make sure that they are connected, even though their broader community or their household may not be.
I love this. So if any of our listeners are listening and they want to reach out to you or to Khajiit, does that make sense to you? Or how should they get you involved with their local school district if they need it? Is there a way for our listeners to connect with what you're offering?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can certainly learn plenty about us and connect with us through our website at khajiit.com. You can also reach out to me directly. I'm on Twitter at Michael M. Flood. So they can always just look for me on Twitter and then they can reach out directly. We do have teams all over the country, so we're always interested in engaging with communities and districts.
And is there any projects you're working on right now that you think would be interesting for people to know about, to know more about?
You know, I think what was really interesting last year was we worked with so many districts to solve this issue locally, which is great to see that level of activity and the focus that schools turned to this issue. But ultimately, because we have a broad view across thousands of school districts, what we really saw was the same solution being, you know, rediscovered over and over again across thousands of school districts. And I think what was really exciting for us last year was we had three states that we partnered with that actually looked at this at the state level and worked with us to try and roll out a solution that the state could do some of the heavy lifting of figuring out how to do it. And then Khajiit could work with the local school districts for their local implementation details, you know, what network was best for them, how they wanted to deploy it, you know, to which students. But we worked in three states where we did that. Connecticut is one of those that I think was the most impressive, where every school district in the state was provided connectivity for their students by the governor and the State Department of Education.
I feel like that's so I feel very happy to hear that. I just feel like that's such a positive example of that public-private partnerships and how you can actually be smarter about the deployment of solutions like this. And to have every single school district be responsible for figuring this out doesn't make sense. But when you get the state leadership in there to help solve the problem and then a group like Khajiit to help implement it at the local level, that is a win-win, it seems to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you mentioned earlier that I do come from a telecom background and, you know, the education ecosystem in the United States is very fragmented. We have, you know, 11,000 or 14,000, you know, local school districts and private schools and charter schools and things like that. So it's very, very fragmented. But in the telecom industry, everything gets better with scale. So, you know, as you can do larger projects that impact larger populations, the economics get better, the technology gets better. And so it's really a crucial role to see states play in being able to help aggregate the needs and the demand and work with providers who can work across all of the networks to meet the needs of all their schools.
I can't help but think there's an analogy with our public health kind of
rollout. And Khajiit's actually done some work in telehealth as well. So, you know, the same sort of solution does exist and the same needs are there. If you're a low-income family who's trying to get the technology and the connectivity needed to do a remote patient visit with your doctor, you know, the same sort of technology can be used for that use case as well.
Very true. Very insightful. Well, Michael, it's so great to talk with you. We always end our conversations with a question for our guests about what makes them optimistic and what are the trends you're seeing? What is it that helps you get through your day with a little bit of positivity and optimism?
Absolutely. That's a fantastic question. So I'll share something personal as I talk about that. For many years growing up, my family was very engaged in medieval reenactment, right? So reenacting the Middle Ages. And if you're going to reenact the Middle Ages, you really only want to reenact the good parts, because there were a lot of bad parts. And what makes me optimistic, you know, I think a lot of people in society today kind of think about the problems and the disagreements we have, but in reality, standards of living and quality of life has never been better worldwide, not just in the United States, but worldwide, than it is today. And we continue to make immense progress, you know, as a human race. And I believe that that is going to continue. I'm always excited by the new technologies that are coming out, you know, that are helping us solve new problems, whether that's within my own industry or across many other industries. And I believe that there are a huge number of people that I interact with every day, not just in the education system where they are very prevalent, but across a lot of industries that are really thinking about how to leverage this technology to improve lives. And that is always incredibly pleasing to hear and makes me very optimistic.
I love that you pointed that out. And that's something that we at the Optimist Daily have been trying to help people remember or reframe, is that, yes, there's big issues and this has been a really tough year, but things are better than they were, especially in the 1400s, if you think about it, right? There's lots of bad stuff back then.
But even just 100 years ago.
Even 100 years ago, exactly. When you look at how far we've come, imagine how much further we can go and just keep focusing on that. And you're right. More people die of old age than they do of war today compared to even 100 years ago.
And we are investing more than ever in our families and our children. And that is the future. So,
yeah. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Anything else you want to share with us today? Any last words before we say goodbye?
Just thank you. You know, appreciate both of you, Christy and Amelia, for taking time to talk, and look forward to hearing this on the air, and happy to come back and visit anytime.
Thank you so much, Michael. This has been really an interesting conversation. I love learning more about this whole ecosystem that you're living in, because it's not something that I've had to think about that much, although I have recently with, you know, my son having to work remotely and all of us. So I think I love what you're doing. I appreciate Khajiit, and I appreciate the collective spirit that you're expressing in the whole education field.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening today to the Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share positive solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to keep covering current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offering you the information you need to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com, and for just $5 a month, support reader-funded, independent journalism and great content like this. Be part of the solution changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem solving mindset. Let's keep the Optimist Daily free to all who need it, supported by those who can. Thanks for being here today, Michael, and everybody, we'll see you tomorrow.